Hey everybody, I'm Craig Eastman from theoneliner.com, and joining me tonight via the insidious black magic of Skype are site creator and general overlord Scott Morris.
Hello.
And of course, site contributor Drew Tavendale.
How do it?
How come he gets the Hollywood intro and I don't?
Do you want a Hollywood intro?
Yeah, please.
Okay. This is the Hollywood intro take. Hi, everybody. I'm Craig Eastman from theoneliner.com, and joining me tonight via the insidious black magic of Skype, our site creator and general overlord, Scott Morris.
Hello.
And, of course, site contributor, Drew Tavendale.
I can't respond to that. I want to kill you. Your voice makes me want to kill you.
I'll take that as a hello. Tonight, as well as our regular top 10 rundown, we'll be taking a look at some of the current crop of scary or not so scary horror offerings. So without further ado, let's go to Scott for the top 10 UK box office cinema offerings.
Okay, as usual, we're running a little bit behind, but it's October the 12th to the 14th that these statistics come from. At number 10, we've got The Invasion, which could almost kind of go into the horror theme, except for the fact that it's not scary at all.
Why didn't it scare you, Scott?
Because it's... The Invasion, for those who don't know about it, is another remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Nicole Kidman.
But we need one.
James Bond. Well, you know, you don't really need one because it's pretty much the same as all the rest, but not as good.
Surely not.
Where's all
seemed
the rest?
Seemed to say the paranoia, which is what made the other films, wasn't actually necessary.
No,
yes, it's
paranoid
running around. Paranoia.
Yeah, so it's basically Nicole Kidman sort of running about trying to stay awake for about an hour, and it's not particularly good.
Especially because in the film, largely, the time she seems to not be able to stay awake for is about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Stay awake for one day. Oh no, I can't do that. It's too hard.
I'm a big fan of the 70s version of Body Snatchers. How does it compare to that in terms of is it similarly plotted, or is it completely, how does it fit into the modern idiom?
The basic plot's exactly the same. There is aliens taking people over, and when you fall asleep, well, sometimes you wake up and you're an alien. Or
don't you just hate it when that happens?
Well, it's a problem.
Twice this year's enough.
So yeah, I mean, the basics of it are the same. It's slightly rejiggered, and it's trying to be more of a kind of action film, I guess. When it's towards the end, they're all running about, and conveniently they all decide to wear black suits, so you always know who's an alien and who isn't, because they're wearing a dull, somber black suit and sort of staring aimlessly at you, and excellent, acting almost like zombies, because they just sort of go, ooh, someone who's different from us, and start running towards them.
So it's fair to say that you guys didn't particularly appreciate Invasion.
Well, it's like reasonably well acted. It looks quite nice. It's got fairly decent production values because it's got a half decent budget. But that's why it's not any good. Well, not any good, but it's a B movie, and they've tried to change it.
They've tried to throw A movie money at it.
Mm.
Yeah, and it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked at all.
It was, of course, it was quite famous for being beset by production problems, wasn't it? And in fact, the original film was shot almost 2 years ago now, and they've since gone back and filmed whole new scenes, resulting in the infamous Kidman car crash.
Yes, she really injured herself, didn't she? Yes.
Yeah. I think she may have chipped a nail, Drew. Is that funny to you?
Deeply. I'm a flawed personality, I know, but it's deeply amusing.
Your lack of empathy pleases me.
Take What's back your nails.
What's at number 9, Scott?
Right, number 9 is Black Sheep, surprisingly, for such a small film, but we'll be talking about that later on, so we'll lightly skip over that.
Excellent, and at number 8?
Number 8 and number 7 are full up with two Bollywood films, which called, and bear with me, Lag Chunari Mine Dag, and number 7 is Bulaya, possibly.
Bulaya.
Something along those lines.
And have you investigated either of these films, Scott?
My basic thoughts on this is if Mark Kermode doesn't have to review them, then we shouldn't have to.
Okay.
So what would be on that point of principle, we'll move on to number 6.
Yes,
which
number
is
6.
Atonement, which again I can't really talk too much about because I haven't seen it.
Drew, have you seen Atonement?
Not to talk about that. I've not seen it either, no.
Excellent stuff. We're fairly rattling through this. What's at, what's at number five?
Sadly, it's something we'll probably have to talk about. Bit of a pest. Run, Fat Boy, Run. The David Schwimmer-directed Simon Pegg film, which I know we've all seen.
Once again, a film starring Simon Pegg as Simon Pegg.
Excellent. But he's such a likeable chap. Why shouldn't we see him as much as we possibly can?
Likeable, although not particularly fat.
No, exactly. He did have to wear a bit of a fat suit paunch for this, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yes, but it's more of a very small beer belly as opposed to actually being fat.
Yes, exactly. I myself didn't really have much feeling one way or another about the film. I wasn't impressed, but then I didn't expect to be either. So in that sense, it kind of met my expectations. What did you fellas think?
Oh, I was reasonably entertained for the 85-90 minute running time. I laughed a few times. I didn't feel cheated at my money, but other than that, it's pretty unmemorable.
Yeah, and Scott?
Yeah, much the same. You've got Simon Pegg doing his Simon Pegg shtick. I can only guess what a nightmare it would have been if it originally was going to be filmed in New York, I believe, but being where David Schwimmer was more famous. Apparently Simon Pegg took the script and they took some of the sentimentality out of it, which, given that it was fairly sentimental, certainly towards the end, I can't imagine how slushy the original script must have been.
What were the purported reasons behind the move from New York to London, then?
No one would fund it.
Excellent. So essentially it's just cheaper.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's cheap, disposable, and it does exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah, just picked up as a Simon Pegg vehicle, which it was, and it worked as such, but it's nothing special.
It worked as such because he's got the job as Scotty now, hasn't he?
That's true.
Yes, it has.
I'm sure he'll get a bob or two for that. So I'm sure he thinks it's a fantastic film. The rest of us, I think we can safely say, decidedly nonplussed then.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're a Simon Pegg fan, I don't run out to rent it or anything or buy it, but it pops up on TV sometime. You'll sit down, you'll enjoy it, and then never think about it again.
It's not exactly up there with Hot Fuzz or Spaced or something like that.
Absolutely not, no.
No. What's next on the list, Scott?
Number four, The Kingdom, the Peter Berg helmed police procedural come action film, I guess. There was a terrorist incident in Saudi Arabia and a bunch of CIA agents are sent over to investigate.
What develops? You've forgotten already.
What?
That's a fairly damning indictment in itself.
To be fair, it didn't make an awful lot of an impact. It has quite a nice action scenes towards the end where they kind of find out who's the responsible and go chasing after him through the badlands of Saudi Arabian towns. I didn't really think there was such a thing, but, well, there isn't here. But the first roughly half of the film, where they're basically doing the investigation of the bomb site and all that while being obstructed by Saudi minders that are going around with them, isn't really a lot of fun. It's quite a chore to get through.
Is it the type of film that has some sort of political pretense? Would it like to think it's telling you something meaningful?
It thinks it's Syriana, but it's not. it's an action film, and it's a adequate action film. It's all right. And the gunfight at the end that Scott was talking about just a moment ago, it's pretty entertaining. And you don't see that many gunfights like that in films nowadays. It's well staged. But the rest of it, and it ends with a bit where you think, oh, yes, good, they're saying that, you know, things aren't quite that cut and dried when something's over. It's not really over. But then, like, you're an action film. You haven't put enough political spin on the rest of it to make it what you're saying actually valid. You think you're Syriana, but you're not.
So a bit of a misstep then.
Well, to be honest, I wouldn't really try to emulate Syriana in the first place.
From the point of view of being a film, I wouldn't, but Syriana was obviously trying to make a point. Whether it did it or not, it's a different matter, but the Kingdom...
It did make a point. It said it's quite painful to have your fingernails ripped off. What more do you want?
Yes, well,
we didn't know that already. That's startlingly insightful.
Yeah, the other problem with The Kingdom is just it's something so endemic in films at the moment. It's just points. The first half largely concerns the investigation of the crime. And Chris Cooper's digging in a big pit in the ground and he finds some things that are significant to find out the perpetrator. But the camera will not stay still. He pulls something out of the ground. He's doing like a procedural investigation. So like, just leave a normal camera locked on Chris Cooper and whatever, and follow whatever he's finding so you can look at it and say, ah, what is that? Oh, I've worked that out.
It's a bit of an epidemic at the moment, isn't it, this whole loose camera work?
Yeah, it's enough to make you start up a fund for Steadicams.
Yeah, I'm telling you, L-Dopa is a Parkinson's drug. That's what most cameramen in Hollywood need nowadays, apparently.
Are you sure L-Dopa is a drug and not a drug dealer? It sounds like a Colombian overload.
Maybe in your neighbourhood, Scott, where I live, is definitely a drug.
What's actually annoying about this, though, which I've discovered, actually, is that a lot of this stuff is actually, believe it or not, shot on supports. It's not actually handheld. It's loose on the ball, where they use a ball head, but basically they leave all the axes, the locks and all the axes off, so that they can sort of emulate a shaky style, which to me seems to be defeating the purpose a little bit. Yeah,
that's really, really stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So
very stupid.
The campaign to stop loose on the ball camera work starts here. The best action film we've seen in recent memory was probably the only thing that marred that slightly in the Bourne Quintus Winti Wentum, whatever it was, I don't know.
Ultimatum.
That's the one. Ultimatum. We could just about forgive that, but can we please stop it now? I think are we all agreed on that?
It makes an interesting change, yeah.
Yes, pop your cameras back on the tripods, boys, and lock your axes off. What's the next on the list, Scott? What's earned marginally more money than The Kingdom this week?
The Heartbreak Kid.
Oh,
which I've not seen yet. Did you go and see it?
I didn't go and see it. I was busy sticking pins in my eyes that night.
Fair enough. Probably better than another. Would you like to give us a review of Ben Stiller ones?
Hmm.
It's to give us a review of your eye pin experience, because it would clearly be more entertaining.
there was lots of, oh God, what's the name for the stuff that fills your eye, Drew?
Eye juice.
Is it the aqueous humour?
Yeah. Aqueous humour, yeah, and the vitreous humour behind it.
Well, there we go. It was an evening of aqueous and vitreous humour.
Eye juice.
Eye juice, exactly. I was spurting eye juice everywhere. And glad I was. We can't obviously really talk about The Heartbreak Kid, but shall we cast vicious aspersions anyway? Shall we launch into an invective anyway?
Well, the only thing I've got to say about it is that there was a time not that long ago when you'd go, oh good, a Ben Stiller movie. You know what's going to expect? It'll be the same kind of Ben Stiller, Will Ferrell and one of the Wilson brothers in it, and they will do silly things for a while, but that seems to have gone away of late. And
well, Ben Stiller's canon has always been hit and miss in my view, but like you say, there was a time when the hits were, if not more frequent, then certainly a lot heavier. There were a few good belly laughs to be had, but I haven't seen him in anything lately. Along Came Polly. What? Give me a break. Anything since then, I think you can pretty much just leave it to one side, can you? Or did you guys think the whole Meet the Parents and Meet the Fockers thing was actually any good?
Nope.
It's as good as cancer.
Excellent. We're all agreed on that one then. What? Yeah, then
it's funny because it's Fokker.
What sits atop Heartbreak Kid at the box office, Scott? Anything more worthy?
Well, we... Resident Evil 3... which we will dissect later on, and let's just try not to think about it for now.
We'll put that
safest all round.
We're going to stick that one on the back burner to a point where it's likely to get edited.
Let's burn it.
Yeah. Any sort of burner sounds like a very good idea. I second that motion.
What's above Resident Evil then, Scott?
The Disney Pixar monolith continues again with Ratatouille, which is Pixar by the numbers quite entirely. But the basic plot of this is it's one of the first ones where humans actually seem to have kind of a role of any significant note. A rat somehow works out he's a very good cook and decides to ply his trade in a Paris restaurant, helped by a man who can't cook. That's
it makes sense to me.
It stumbles along for a while and it's likeable enough, but it's getting pretty mediocre. There's no real spark in it. There's no real flair. It's okay. It'll keep your kids quiet when you watch them at half term, and it won't do a lot more for anyone else.
Do you have any feelings one way or another on Ratatouille, Drew?
Not too different from how Scott feels about it, and it is Pixar by numbers, but Pixar by numbers requires defter brush strokes and produces a better composition end than pretty much anything else in the 3D animation world, bar the first two Shreks.
Very much a case of Pixar on a bad day is better than most other people on a good day, sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's certainly better than their last outing, Cars, which suffered a lot from the fact that you can't really get attached to Cars, and you can't anthropomorphise Cars. They don't look.
You can get people attached to Cars. You can have a crash in them. you just watch the fire service try and cut you out.
Well, it's decided that, well, Cars is quite difficult to make it lovable, so let's do Rats.
I can see the logic.
That's how it goes.
They're not certainly worse better than Cars. And yeah, it's okay. There's some fun bits. And there's a scene in the kitchen where the rat's trying to escape, which contains more tension in that one scene than the entirety of Resident Evil 3. But again, that's not much of a challenge.
Exactly. The last time I blew my nose into a tissue contained more tension than Resident Evil.
Yes, but it's competent, you know, as all Pixar stuff has been, but it just doesn't have sort of the flair and imagination of the early stuff like Monsters, Inc. and the Toy Stories, well, particularly.
You don't like to say it, but the Pixar's becoming very much like Disney. It's just they're finding a little groove, and they're just going to keep on grinding that groove into the ground until eventually they start making Brother Bear.
In fairness to them, whether intentionally or inadvertently, they did set themselves some awfully high benchmarks to start with, didn't they? Really. Yeah, it's hard to imagine how anyone anytime soon is going to top, you know, Toy Story and Toy Story 2.
They're not going to do it. But I mean, stuff like, I never enjoyed The Incredibles that much first time around, but second watch and enjoyed a lot more. And Monsters, Inc., although it wasn't the best animated film that year, Shrek had been better than it. It was inventive. It looked pretty. And it was still very funny and entertaining. But they've plateaued at a higher level than Disney ever did. But they've plateaued, and quite quickly too.
Do you think
they run out of steam
a little too
quickly? Yeah, very possibly.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with their next release then, which is it Wall-E, which I think we've got coming out next year?
Not sure. I'm actually aware of it.
I'm sure.
A shocking lack of preparation for talking about that. I've not actually noticed what's coming out next from Pixar, but...
I'm sure they have Wall-E, which is a tale of a small robot who looks to the heavens one day and decides he's meant for better things, and it's being touted rather pretentiously by a trailer I saw a few months ago on iTunes. You might want to check it out. It rather pretentiously has very little footage in it, but it's got sort of a dreamy little bubble floating about with video footage of Brad Bird in it, basically saying, oh, you know, when we started Pixar, this was the first film we really wanted to make, and everything else has just been a bench test for this. It's going to be the best thing ever. And they may wish they'd never said that, because on current evidence, they're struggling to maintain momentum, I think.
Did they at any point say that they were raising the bar so high that they weren't sure there'd be a bar anymore?
No, we'll leave that up to Joel Silver. Joel, what have you done with that bar? You didn't raise it so high it doesn't exist anymore. You just slightly misplaced it, didn't you? If anybody's seen Joel Silver's bar, please drop us an email at podcast@theoneliner.com and let us know where Joel Silver's bar was last seen. Heading south of the box office from the last two Matrix debacles, I think, was the last time it was on the radar.
Just out of interest, does anyone know if Disney have actually started up their old school animation division again? The flat, cel-shaded nonsense.
Is this what they were touting? Was it?
I'd heard rumours that they were going to start it back up again, but it's always seemed an odd decision to just shut it down anyway. I mean, it's still what Disney's famous for. Okay, we've done a lot of crap television stuff,
I think.
Oh, yes, well, they've got all their Disney channels to fill with.
Yes, their direct-to-video sequel, 8, Factory. Yes, exactly.
There was a rather pleasing announcement not that long ago, I think, that they decided, and it's taken about 40-odd years to do it, that they would stop. It was after people from Pixar came on board, actually. John Lasseter, when he got put in charge of all of Disney Animation, said they were going to stop sullying their works by releasing very poor quality direct-to-video sequels.
Yes.
That's nice. But for that to work now, since they've already sullied all the good stuff they already had done, Jungle Book 2, anyone?
I refuse to watch it.
I've refused to watch it too. The first one's too good. I will not have my memory of that sullied, but
exactly.
They need to now actually produce something worthwhile of not sullying.
And there's a whole lot of sullying going down.
they're in a bit of a sully catch 22. That's the top 10 then of UK films currently on release. Without further ado, let's move on and talk about some of the, well, I say horror films. I use the word in the vaguest possible sense. It's been 5 years now since that most discerning of Hollywood directors, Paul W.S. Anderson, first gifted us a movie adaptation of the video game franchise Resident Evil, and 3 years since he saw fit to unleash its sequel, Resident Evil Apocalypse. Now, ushering in our own personal winter of discontent, comes Resident Evil Extinction, again written by Anderson, but this time helmed by the truly burgeoning intellect of one Russell Mulcahy, he of Highlander and, well, Highlander 2 fame.
Videos.
Yes, exactly. Him what done Wild Boys for Duran Duran. Drew, what do you say of the plot, sir?
They had a plot.
My bad.
Well, largely what they seem to have taken is, like, they watched Day of the Dead, thought, that was quite good. And then they watched Fantastic Four, presumably thought that was quite good too, and combined them.
No, so then, one great big battle of shit.
Yes.
The whole purpose of it is it's supposed to be set 5 years after the events of the last film, after they tried desperately to stop this T-virus by nuking a city. Surprisingly, that didn't work, because nuclear weapons never, ever work in films. And all of a sudden, it's
nuclear
taken over...
equals bad.
Yeah, so the T-virus has taken over the world, and there's a few pockets of humanity going about, milling about aimlessly, about as much as the zombies are, and driving around Mad Max style, to the extent that this is almost beyond a Thunderdrome, as they're trying to find petrol and all sorts of...
Very reminiscent of that in a sort of cheap knock-off kind of way, actually, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, a cheap knock-off way that actually costs more, which makes no sense at all, but... Well done, Mr. Anderson.
To use our word of the night, it manages to sully that which... that which like a $5,000 film achieved, you know, on the back of a napkin, basically.
So while all this is going about, you've got Alice, your hero of the first two films, driving about on a bike, just driving about on a bike, essentially.
Ignoring people, mostly.
Well, she's doing the John Connor thing of staying off the grid, seemingly, because the Umbrella Corporation are still messing about with T-viruses and making all sorts of fancy new zombies, including the, I think the games are called Crimson Heads or something, but in this one they're just the standard run-fast zombies that you see in pretty much every zombie franchise these days. Precisely what the point of it is quite difficult to ascertain.
Here's the thing, is it kind of lost its footing a bit with the second film, because the first film, it had at least a passing resemblance to actually, you know, the Resident Evil, the games. The second one wasn't, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't have a lot to do with the games, other than the characters and certain plot points, I think, but... It's diverged so much now that actually Resident Evil Apocalypse has almost nothing to do with any of the games. Am I correct in this?
It's certainly now considered non-canon, which is yes. Scary that you have such a thing for a game based on a film of a game of a film of a game. Forget how it works out in the end.
I mean, let's be honest here. The Resident Evil games were never strong on plot to begin with, really, were they?
They were never really strong on being games to begin with.
No, exactly. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the franchise, but it always seemed odd to me that they picked those in the first place to sort of, you know... Yeah. In many ways, I think Tomb Raider came first, didn't it, out of the sort of the big budget game adaptations, but Resident Evil was one, I think, that people thought maybe they had a little bit more hope for, given that, you know, there was at least some material there, more than a girl in hot pants jumping about with two guns. How wrong we were.
Yeah. The first film did have some of the worst CG I've ever seen.
The second was not a lot better either, actually.
Well, it's still pony in most places, isn't it?
Yeah. Features crawling around the walls of the church. That was bad.
See, if there's one thing you have to, playing devil's advocate for a moment, there's parts of the last Resident Evil film where it's not. You can kind of see that they had some clue of what they were doing. It's mostly quite. The effects aren't bad.
You must be wearing some special kind of glasses, man.
Well, there's the whole bit at the start where it does the kind of not quite a recap of the first two films, where it's kind of like one of Alice's dream sequence, and it turns out to be one of many clones.
Yes,
the body's taken out to the big old trench with like 80 odd Alice bodies just sitting there rotting in the sun. Some bits like that are actually quite good. Here's my problem with that.
None of them were rotting, though. Presumably they'd been piling up over the course of a few days, and they were all pristine.
Well, yes, but that's one of a couple of things that bothered me about the film, just that they hadn't applied enough thought to it, and you can tell it was written by Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yes, exactly.
Who directed the first film and wrote all three of them, and you know, just clearly can't write dialogue, action, anything, really.
Why do people keep giving Paul W.S. Anderson as opposed to let's please no one ever confuse him with P.T. Anderson.
Yes.
Paul W.S. Anderson is just one of these men who sits in a corner, and for some reason people keep writing him big checks and say, on you go, Paul, do what you like. Will it stop?
Well, seemingly not. Don't we have Aliens versus Predator 2 coming out in the next couple of months?
We do. Yes. Is he directing that film, or has he just written it again? Because, of
cares?
Course, he both wrote and directed Aliens versus Predator, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I was saying about Resident Evil 3 and the corpse is not rotting, as you mentioned.
I'm picking on small points here, aren't I?
Oh, it's not, though. It's just symptomatic of the problems with the game as a whole. There's a scene where the convoy are attacked by some killer crows who have fed on the flesh of...
You heard them right, guys. Killer crows.
But not in any sort of Hitchcock style, actually frightening way. More just, oh, look, there are some black specks on screen. They're attacking them. No, wait, that's not scary.
Actually, the only bit of that film that actually even caused me to raise a single eyelash, never mind an eyebrow, was at least marginally visually arresting, where she, for some reason, decides to just scorch thousands of crows.
This is my main problem with it. It's just collapsing under the weight of its own silly mythology, because over the course of the last two films, Alice is turning into, well, Neo off the Matrix, and can do all sorts of crazy...
Now she's got psychic powers.
Unparalleled powers, she's busy raising a bar again. And it's just silly, because it creates that's a stupid Deus Ex Machina get out that bit with the crows, and then it happens at the end as well. And it's so annoying. It has two main problems. The first one is that it's just the series just should have been put to rest a good long while ago if it shouldn't have been started in the first place, more likely.
Yes, something before it was even conceived. It should have been killed off.
And this is the scariest thing about it, isn't it? Is that unfortunately it's quite clearly they haven't drawn a line under it. It's quite clearly, you know, intended to cause us to suffer a fourth installment.
And again, the problem with the fourth one is the same one that the third will have, is that the bad guy is terrible. Dr. Isaacs is supposedly your terribly scary scientist who's doing all sorts of mean things, and he's the single most wooden actor I've ever seen. I've seen more threatening jam donuts. And
you're not kidding. The man is just abominable.
So by the time he turns into the big freaky monster at the end, you just don't care.
Well, to be honest, the guy they had playing Albert Wesker, have you ever seen anything
that's
more
some
camp
of the funniest acting I've ever seen?
Yeah, I mean, that'll be your problem, the next one, because he's terrible.
I'm not sure whether it's terrible or it's absolutely genius and I'm just missing something, honestly. I think the man responsible for playing Albert Wesker in that film, he's possibly the only person in that whole film who realises he's sitting at the centre of a pile of shite, and he's just going to have some fun for his money, you know?
I suspect not, though. Watching the Wesker character, I was forcibly reminded of the original game for Saturn and PlayStation. You know, with the infamous Barry, where's Barry? And it was that sort of level of acting from the Wesker guy, and I was expecting more of it from other characters, so I wasn't disappointed, mostly.
Perhaps that's where the series then stays most true to the games, is that the guy playing Albert Wesker in this installment is possibly identically as bad as the man responsible for playing him in the first game.
Or any of them, really.
I think, were you about to say, Scott, that it's a bit of a problem because he's going to be the central focus of the fourth film, presumably,
if they do commission it. It would, well...
But see, I'm almost looking forward to that then, because I think at least it's going to be hilariously bad as opposed to just bad. I think that it'll just sort of halfway through it'll break into a musical number and he'll have a top hat and cane and just sort of dance up. I don't know, tap zombies on the head with his cane. That's what I'm hoping for. I may be disappointed. Actually, I've just made a better film than all three of them, haven't I?
You sure have, Craig. You sure have.
We'll draw a line under Resident Evil then. I mean, is anybody at all going to get any enjoyment from this, guys?
I honestly cannot see it. Let's put it that way. If you did like the first two films, you'd probably like this, but then again, you'd probably like being hit with a hammer. So,
and God, Drew, where would you say it stands in the rankings, Drew, out of the three films? Where is this one placed in terms of goodness?
It's probably the best of the three, but that's like saying throat cancer is probably better than intestinal cancer.
So simply put, sir. And on that note, let's move on to talk a bit about Black Sheep, in which the populace surrounding a sizeable New Zealand farm are beset by vicious killer sheep, of course. It's being touted as the low-budget horror gem of the year, as well as the calling card of a gifted young Kiwi writer-director by the name of Jonathan King, not to be confused with the man who likes children. If that sounds vaguely familiar, not the liking children bit, it should come as no surprise that King has been likened to a certain Peter Jackson. But is this a fair comparison? And more pressingly, is Black Sheep all it's being cracked up to be? Scott, I beg you to speak, sir.
It's not all it's cracked up to be in the slightest. It is, obviously, it's very influenced by Peter Jackson's film, and it goes for the sort of bad taste kind of school of schlock. There's plenty of gore towards the end, but it's also trying to be quite funny, the same way that Bad Taste was, but it's managing not to be particularly funny and to not be particularly scary. Basically, the basic plot is, as you say, there's a bunch of scientists who, for no good reason whatsoever, decide to make sheep that are carnivorous somehow.
I can think of lots of good reasons. I just don't want to divulge them right now.
It's just silly.
Is it silly in a puerile sense, or is it silly in a sort of, you know, you can appreciate that it is?
No, it's you can kind of see what they're going for, and if you catch it in a good mood, then you'll probably at least go, okay, I'll go with it for a while. If you have a couple of beers, you'll probably quite like it. As a film, it's just not good enough, and there's just simply not enough there. It's a very good 40-minute film, a kind of short film, but when it's stretched out to 90 minutes, it becomes almost insufferable. There's some pretty poor acting all the way throughout. No one's particularly likable. The bad guy's not particularly dislikable.
And in fairness, a Bad Taste, which is regarded as a bit of a milestone, certainly in the career of Peter Jackson, it didn't really display a fantastic level of acting either, did it? But what it had in droves was inventiveness. Does Black Sheep display any kind of inventiveness, guys, or is it just really...
No, if your idea of inventiveness is a sheep with sharp teeth, then okay.
I don't know, that could be quite inventive.
It's chock full of that. Other than that, no, not really. I'm trying to think if there is anything that is of any interest whatsoever to anyone, and I can't. I'm pretty much drawing a blank.
I mean, there is. I mean, if it's like any Peter Jackson film, it's probably closest to Braindead. But just not quite as good then. That's quite an old film now, Braindead, and it still manages to do it better.
On what level? Why has it succeeded so? Why has it gained so much sort of momentum then? Why has it found such distribution?
I suspect it's because, compared to every other horror film, it's okay. It's actually quite good. But that's because you're comparing it to every other horror film, which is not a good basis of comparison for anything, really.
No, exactly.
No.
In that case... Oh, sorry. On you go, Scott.
Rather a lot has been made of the fact that the animatronics had been done by the Weta Workshop, and they're pretty decent looking in as much as it's possible to get a realistic looking carnivorous sheep head controlled by motors. But
it doesn't look like they all want one of those.
But the sheep, the evil sheep for the close-ups, the animatronics don't really look any better than, say, the sort of level of sophistication the Jim Henson Creature Workshops managed to do for Aslan the Lion in the BBC's early 90s adaptation of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. You know, so I mean, that's about 15 odd years later, and it's not really any better. So why that's been played up quite so much, I'm not sure.
So I mean, am I correct in saying it's almost it's very much a no budget film, isn't it? And how did they, do we know how managed to get the involvement of the Weta Workshop?
pretty possible, because I'm not sure what state New Zealand's film industry's in. You certainly wouldn't, you don't see many Kiwi films over here, but perhaps it's just lack of work.
They just had nothing on that day. Fair enough, then. So,
to be honest, it does look like something Weta did in their tea break. I don't think there's a tremendous amount of time and money spent on it.
Quite possibly a bit of a favour, just as a little sort of, you know, more for the enjoyment of on Weta's part than for any sort of, you know.
I don't know if there's a New Zealand equivalent of the youth training scheme, but I suspect that's probably what it is. You get your interns in to go off and make me some sheep. Oh, okay.
In that case, then, guys, I think we can probably safely say then that the Black Sheep comes as a bit of a disappointment.
Disappointment, perhaps. It's still the best horror film of that we're going to look at this show, and I suspect it'll probably end up being the best horror film of the year, given the kind of year we're having. I don't think Saw 4 is going to top it in any way, shape, or form.
So, if Black Sheep is possibly the best film of the year, and definitely the best film we'll be discussing tonight, gentlemen, tell me your thoughts on Rob Zombie's, quote, reimagining, unquote, of the original Halloween.
Do I have to?
Yes, you do.
Right. It is a remake of the John Carpenter film, and it's more or less the same. You've got Michael Moore.
Palin.
You've got Michael Moore. It's a radical reimagining. The little kid who flips out and kills his parents and everyone else around the place. Now, it's slightly different in that it spends a lot more time looking at the kid as a youngster. Whereas the first film, if my shaky memory goes, he only kills his
sister
before being taken away to the funny farm. In this one, he goes absolutely mental. It's quite amusing. You have the child psychologist played by Malcolm McLaren in this one, who finds some slightly disturbing things, like, oh, he's killed a dog. This could be an early warning sign of something bad about to happen. Like, well, really? You think? And so the kid goes from zero to...
Because of kids do it every day.
Well, this kid goes from zero to crazy in about 2 seconds and starts killing... he kills one of the bullies. He kills his stepfather. He kills his sister. He kills pretty much everyone else who happens upon him until he's left with only his mother and little baby sister. Oh. So he's taken away and put in the funny farm. 15 years later, he's grown into a massive psychotic beast. The psychologist has completely given up on him being anything other than pure evil. And then he escapes and goes on a rampage again. That's more or less all you get from it. See, the annoying thing is it does do all the same hokey things that Halloween pretty much invented back in the day. And it's still hokey here, and it's not particularly effective, but you can't really say, well... It's one of those annoying films where you can't really criticise it too much for doing that, because it's supposed to be doing that, because it's a remake of the film that did it in the first place. It doesn't make it any good, though.
No. Is there any merit in what Rob Zombie's trying to do with the film at all? Is he actually giving anything to the Halloween franchise, or is he simply just standing on the shoulders of giants and then falling off?
It's probably no worse than the first Halloween film, which is still, like everyone else, I think around this table, we don't really see the point of making it, holding it above
anything
else.
I'm not sure why it was so fond over, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I wasn't around at the time to see it in the cinema, but having watched it retrospectively, there are many old films I can appreciate the merits of in the context of the time of the release, but I've never really understood the brouhaha over the original Halloween.
Yeah, so given that I didn't find the first one particularly tense, which is what you're probably looking for here, this one's not particularly tense either, but there's a lot more blood, which I suppose is, if you're kind of turned on by gore, then that's the sort of thing that you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the only significant addition to it that I can see.
Did you find anything worthwhile in there, Drew?
I didn't watch it. I found that very worthwhile.
Ah, of course. You took the route I did, which was to protect yourself from such nonsense.
Yeah, it certainly can't be recommended. There's better things to do with your time. I mean, if you absolutely must see your Rob Zombie films, then knock yourself out, but I can't see why you'd bother. It's probably Rob Zombie's best film. We're not, again, we can start drawing comparison of the cancer again if we need to, but it's just not worth watching in the slightest.
I think the best thing about Halloween, which I haven't seen, but the best thing about it is that in your head at the start of this review, you did actually say that Malcolm McLaren played a part in the film. You do, of course, mean Malcolm McDowell, I would assume. Although, had the part been played by the manager of the Sex Pistols, I'm sure it would, it would have been 10 times better.
Correct, correct.
What's coming out in the next few weeks then, guys, that we're looking forward to?
Eastern Promises. Despite Viggo Mortensen's accent, looks quite promising.
Excellent stuff. Okay, guys, well, we're going to leave it there in the interest of letting you get on with something far more useful in your lives. That was the week that was the, or the weekend, rather, that was the 12th to the 14th of October. Hopefully we'll be back with you soon with another podcast in which we can look at some altogether more worthwhile fare. But it's been great fun ripping apart some feeble attempts tonight for you. I've been Craig Eastman, and it's goodbye from me and from Scott Morris.
Goodbye.
And also from Drew Tavendale.
Goodbye.
We'll speak to you again soon. Thanks, guys.
Mo.